This is Will's Band of the Week for December 30th, 2012. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris.
Hey!
And no Barrett. Barrett is, he's somewhere for the holidays. You know, he thinks he can go somewhere for the holidays and then give up his, or get out of his obligation for this important podcast.
That's right.
I don't know where
Not in the 21st century internet age, he should be able to check in from anywhere, but we'll give him a pass this one time.
We tried to hunt him down before we started recording. And there was a report on Skype that he was online, and then he suddenly went offline. So I think he's running away from us. That's what it looks like, anyway. So it's the last podcast of the year.
Yeah, how about that?
So it seems like we should be doing some sort of year in review kind of thing. Although we did the musical year in review already.
Yeah.
Have you compiled a list of the most important musical events of 2012 that you can go through for us?
I failed to do so. I'm sorry. I wrote a column for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today about the political year in review. You can certainly go read that if you'd like, but not the musical one.
All right. We'll have to keep working on that. So, well, we've reached the end of the year and we haven't run out of music, so that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. We're still going strong. Well, I mean, the big thing is, at the end of the year, you can pick and choose over other people's lists, and you find stuff that would have been on your top 10 list, but had you heard it before, but
you know, I think,
but it didn't make it.
And I think this year is even more than most years. There are like some late things that I've listened to that I like quite a bit, where I'm like, boy, you know, this would have definitely been a contender. There's at least probably three or four.
Well, what have you cherry picked off other people's lists that you would have you probably would have had on yours?
The two that we're going to talk about today would have been contenders. I really like them both. There's another one that maybe we'll talk about in the future called Don Gibson. It's kind of, well, I don't even want to try to describe it. It's D-A-U-G-H-N Gibson. He was on a few people's lists and been kind of getting into that lately. And well, those are the ones that come to mind. But there might be a couple others out there.
I on somebody's list, I believe it was Robin Hilton at NPR, I picked up Jeff the Brotherhood, which I've enjoyed quite a bit. It's almost as if the Ramones played Southern rock type of thing. Let's see, Kishibashi is another. I don't remember the name of the album, but he's almost kind of like the Japanese Andrew Bird. It's almost as if like Andrew Bird and Yanzi had a baby or something. And I don't even like Yanzi all that much, but I really like that album a lot. I think I mentioned on our top 10 list, King Tough is another album I liked a lot. Just throw out some names of ones that probably would have made my list had I gotten to them a little earlier.
Kishibashi, I've heard like a track here and there, but I've never listened to the whole thing.
Yeah, he actually he hit the gold mine, I think, the modern gold mine, which is having a song either like on an iTunes or a iPod commercial or something like that. So, or maybe it's a Microsoft Windows commercial, one of those commercials that takes actually good music and repurposes it for their capitalist crusade. But yeah, he's on one of those.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, isn't it? Who cares about the reviews? You know, Pitchfork can give you a 5.3 or whatever, but if you get an Apple commercial, you're all set, right?
That's right. That's right. I'm trying to think of what the first band to kind of follow that model was. I think it might have been Jet. You remember the band Jet?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the "Are You Gonna Be My Girl?" Is that the name of the song?
It sounds
where
right.
It was like a really upbeat commercial, and yeah, the reviewers weren't very kind to the band Jet on Pitchfork. If you look up one of the albums, one of the Jet albums, it's just a picture or a video of a monkey drinking its own pee, and that's the entire review of the Jet album. So, so they seem to do pretty well in
in spite of that.
Yes, outside of the typical critic structure.
You know, I was watching my son and I. We're at that fortunate point in time where we still have a lot of common musical taste. I'm sure that won't last, but it's really kind of fun for now. So I've been recording, like, any kind of music thing, I'll record on the DVR. So, like, have you ever seen Later with Jules Holland?
Yeah, I've seen, you know, when I have a British band or author or something that I like, I'll usually go on YouTube and there are clips from it.
Because they have the show on a channel, I think it's Palladia, but I'm not sure, but one of the channels we get has that, so we just record it, and it's kind of fun. Usually there'll be one or two interesting things out of the five or six bands or artists he has on each week. So I record that, and then I'll record these live performances, you know, they'll put on, like, 2010 festival from wherever, and it's kind of fun to just go through and watch all these bands. So last night we were watching one of the Jules Holland shows, and we agreed on a band that we both think is terrible. They're really bad. So this probably will make this, well, this band's already famous. The Killers. They are terrible. You ever listen to The Killers?
They were kind of the one, like, alternative band that everybody could agree on in, like, 03 or 04.
Yeah, and I kind of thought they were, like, whatever, in 05 or so, they were that was about it for their relevance. But for some reason, they've maintained popularity, and people still listen to The Killers, I guess. And they were on, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it was on Jules Holland. It was just terrible. So there you go.
Well, I thought the album with Mr. Brightside on it was actually a pretty decent album. I haven't listened to much since then. The interesting thing about The Killers is that they've actually kind of picked up a following amongst, like, Republicans and conservatives, because at one point, Green Day was touring for their American Idiot album, and they were over in Britain or, you know, in France or somebody or somewhere. And doing a show, and they're ripping on America and stuff, and the Killers front guy Brandon Flowers came out and said, "I would never do that. You know, you can, if you're here in America, you can criticize America all you want, but if you go overseas and do it and try to stoke up anti-American resentment, then, you know, that crosses the line." And so suddenly he became like this, you know, big American hero, like, you know, right wing hero, and the fact that he's Mormon and apparently didn't really object to the candidacy of Mitt Romney this time.
There was wasn't there something that Mitt Romney said, "I kind of like The Killers" or something, when somebody asked him what, and I assure you that my opinion about The Killers has nothing to do with that. but I turned this thing on, and Grant said, I said, "Is this going to be any good?" And he said, "Well, just wait till the guy sings, and then you're not, and you'll realize it's terrible." So I think they kind of go for the they're trying to be big, like Coldplay or something. You know, they're trying to be anthemic, and just for me, it just really doesn't work.
Yeah,
but I didn't know that whole story, that whole backstory about the American thing. I didn't know that.
I mean, you would think more bands would maybe try to branch out, you know, to the other side a little bit, but I don't know. Maybe it could lose them some fans on the left. Who knows?
Well, Green Day, speaking of them, but, and I know you weren't, you were okay on this most recent Green Day stuff, I guess, right? I'm thinking they're just, like, starting their descent into irrelevance.
Yeah, well, they did the three albums in 3 months project. I thought the first one was pretty good. The second one was a little more, you know, it had its high points, but it was there were some low points too. And then this last one, the final third, it was just absolutely terrible. It's completely unlistenable. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they need to take a little time off.
Well, Billy Joe needed some time off, obviously.
He certainly did.
Rehab, yeah. All right, it's time for the contact information. You can contact this podcast by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com. You can also post a comment on the website, willsband.net. You can find us on the social media, Facebook or Twitter. Those are the social media. And you can download the podcast from iTunes or the Stitcher app, or any of those Android apps. And there's one I've just found called Podkicker, because I now have an Android device. I'm diversifying. So, so there you go. Please contact us. We like being contacted.
We are not hard to find.
No, we're not.
Some of you are probably sitting here in my basement with me right now.
I think they feel like they are. They're picturing themselves in your basement because it's so real. So, well, let's get to the music then. I think.
Well, I actually had another. I had another music news thing to talk about.
All right, good. Let's do that.
I actually read the a biography of Dave Grohl. I was sitting here, and I have kind of the stack of books I wanted to get through, and I could have read the biography of Ben Franklin by H.W. Brands. It's called The First American. But, you know, when you're sitting there looking at two books, why not pick the Dave Grohl one, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure. So I plowed through this thing in a couple of days. I'm somewhat interested in Dave Grohl just because we grew up in the same city at kind of about the same time. So
he hit it a lot bigger in the rock and roll world than you did.
A little bit, slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he really is kind of like, I guess he's surpassed, you know, Puff Daddy, but, you know, he just kind of shows up on all these tracks. Like, you know, for a while there, he's the drummer for Queens of the Stone Age, and of course, drummer for Nirvana and lead man for the Foo Fighters and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it'd be pretty interesting to kind of see what he's up to. I didn't realize he went to Thomas Jefferson High School in Northern Virginia, which is actually where geniuses go. Like, that's the genius of all genius schools there.
Wow.
And ended up dropping out and not even ever graduating. So he's got to be a really smart guy, but seems to have done him well. But the book itself, I think it's a pretty good book. It's kind of written in like kind of the usual rock writing style, which I'm not particularly a fan of, where the book starts out with, Dave Grohl and I are sitting at a bar, and suddenly he reaches over and slaps me in the face, where, like, authors just kind of, like, put themselves in the middle of the story, yeah. And it's just like, yeah, kind of your typical, you know, it's like the writing that What's-His-Face does in Almost Famous, like the Lester Bang style of rock writing. But so that kind of the book is written by a guy named Paul Hannigan, who used to write for Kerrang! Magazine, which I had never heard of. I guess it's like a British fanzine, kind of alternative music weekly. But throughout the book, he references Kerrang! Magazine the whole time. So I don't know if it's just an attempt to promote his own magazine or what. But you know, I thought a lot of the information was good. It really is only about 25% about Grohl himself. It's pretty clear he sat down with Dave Grohl maybe twice in his life to talk about stuff. And the rest is just all kind of source material. But three quarters of the book is just kind of talking about the different types of scenes that were going on, the musical scenes that he, you know, Grohl would jump into and then jump out of. And, you know, the DC hardcore scene with Minor Threat, and then Fugazi and Black Flag and all that kind of stuff in the early 80s was where he kind of first got his start. And then he got to a band called Scream when he was 17 years old. And I think it does a good job of explaining kind of the snobbery of kind of the hardcore scene, where, you know, you had to be from DC. If you were from Virginia, where Grohl was from, you know, just 10 miles outside, then suddenly you were an outsider and all this kind of stuff. But I actually went on YouTube, and you can find a video of Dave Grohl when he's like 15 years old, drumming for his first band, you know, in like some high school auditorium or something. And it's just crazy. I mean, you can just tell how much talent he has right off the bat, just at age 15. And so at age 17, he eventually joins a real touring band called Scream. Then Nirvana needs a drummer. He joins up with Nirvana. And probably three quarters of the book is just about the early years and then Nirvana. I mean, there's an extensive discussion of the grunge scene and all that kind of stuff. And then only like maybe the last 50 pages of the book is really dedicated to the Foo Fighters, which is, you know, fine by me. It's just kind of, you know, your typical rock stuff. You know, the drummer overdoses at one point and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, so I would recommend it. I think it's pretty good. It's, I mean, if there's one kind of big figure in rock around the world right now, it's probably Dave Grohl. So it's you know, it's at least nice knowing a little bit about him.
Yeah, that sounds good. I bet it's better than the Steven Tyler biography that I started to read.
Is that a biography or an autobiography?
You know what? I think it is an autobiography, but
so it has like Steven Tyler-isms, like right, he'll just stop in the middle of the page and go zoo doo doo ba ba.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what it's like. There's like sentences in all capitals and stuff.
Oh,
like
God.
That. It's just unreadable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other one I've got, I have a real problem, like getting to books and actually sitting down and reading them. Maybe that should be my New Year's resolution to actually read something like from cover to cover. But
yeah, see, this one is 350 pages, and I just sat down and banged it out in 2 days. So, I mean, it's a pretty easy read.
I have the Keith Richards autobiography.
Yeah, that was supposed to be pretty good, right?
Yeah, and I think I got it like 3 years ago. I haven't read it yet, so I got to dig that one out because I've heard good things about it. I think I might have the Neil. You know, I do have the Neil Young one, and I started reading that. It got kind of tedious. So you don't want your book to be tedious.
Yeah.
So,
well, there actually is a discussion in the book about something that we talk about here a lot, and the role of like major labels, and like how you're a sellout if you're on a major label. And you know, at the time where Dave Grohl is just kind of getting his start, Husker Du is one of the big bands, and Bob Mould actually there's a section in there where he talks about, you know, how Husker Du's music never would fit on a major label and all that kind of stuff. And then like 3 months later, I think it's Warner Brothers releases, you know, Flip Your Wig or something mm-hmm. like that, one of their albums. So,
yeah,
you know, it goes back to our discussion that, you know, major labels aren't the devil. And if it takes Husker Du's music to people that normally wouldn't have heard it otherwise, then, you know, more power to them. So
I think, don't you think things have changed now too, that people don't, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I ever paid maybe as much attention to labels as some people do, but yeah. Now it's like, you don't even know what label something is on. Like you get it on Spotify. And if you're doing digital, like we are pretty much, you don't even know what label it's on. Right.
Yeah.
So major label just means it's being promoted more.
And, you know, I'd also read the biography of Kurt Cobain called Heavier Than Heaven by Charles Cross. And this Dave Grohl book touches on it too. The fact that a lot of these guys, Kurt Cobain especially, I mean, he was always like, oh yeah, you know, our music is too good for the masses and all that kind of stuff. When all along he had a plan set out to end up on a major label. I mean, a lot of these bands do, but mm-hmm. you know, you just kind of have to play the game you know, you don't want to and make it sound like you're legit until you finally do, and then nobody really cares. Once you're making that much money, so.
Right, right. Well, if you're gonna make a living playing music, you almost have to have a goal of being on a major label, right? Otherwise, you'll be like all the indie rockers who make enough money to tour, but they're not really making money.
Yeah, you have a real job, and then you go off and you take a couple of months, and then you tour and make a little money, and come back to your real job.
Yeah.
Well, apparently at the library there was a section on like gardening or something where my wife usually gets books, and they switched it over to like the rock section. And so she walked over to the section and saw a couple books that she thought I would want, and that was one of them. There's another book, I don't know what the title of it. It's like the Bob Mould autobiography. And I kind of flipped through it. It didn't really look all that interesting.
I read that one.
The Bob. You did?
Yeah, from a year and a half ago maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, you think? Should I read it?
I actually read it. Yeah, I think it's worth it. Part of it is I was in Minneapolis. See, you've got the tie-in with Dave Grohl. I guess I've got the Bob Mould tie-in. I was living in Minneapolis during some of those prime years, so it's kind of fun reading about the whole Minneapolis thing. Bob Mould was a student at McAllister College in the mid-80s, and I was at the University of Minnesota then. And so, yeah, so I think it's a worthwhile read. Yeah, and it's not written in any kind of annoying tone or anything. It's written pretty straightforward. So
yeah. And then she brought home this the Encyclopedia of Morrissey.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is like of this 400 page book of just like, you know, word by word, like different things about Morrissey. And from there I actually picked out an interesting YouTube video that I posted on Facebook, where one of the first public appearances the Smiths had to do on TV was on this show called Charlie's Bus. It was a children's show. And so Morrissey and Johnny Marr are walking around with all these children, and it's just the most awkward thing ever. And one of the little kids, they're on the bus with Morrissey, and they ask him, like, "Mr. Morrissey, where are we going?" And he goes, "We're all going mad." Showing that deft touch with children that I'm sure he has.
Wow.
And then they go to a park, and then Sandy Shaw shows up and sings a song for him, and it's just completely awkward. We should throw a link to that up on the Facebook page or on the webpage. It's pretty good.
Another one that reminds me of, did you see that video of Cat Power with the kids?
No, I didn't.
There's this video out there, and one of those comedy channel websites. It's Cat Power, Sean Marshall, and she's like talking to a kindergarten class or something, and you know, and she starts reading the book, and then it's a whole kind of a parody of her own persona. It's funny. I can't do it justice, but it's out there. So, well, maybe we should talk about music now.
Like, sure,
real music. Okay, so I think you should take pick one here. So who do we have first?
Well, we have a band called the Sweet Serenades that was actually recommended to me by my friend Johnny Roast Beef, who is a dedicated listener to the podcast, good friend of mine, music friend for over 20 years, and he recommended this. I had not heard it, and it really is kind of like, it's interesting because I described the Jeff the Brotherhood is kind of like the Ramones, if without like all the sheen. Like if the Ramones were like a southern rock band, like if they were drive-by truckers or something. And for me, this band is almost like kind of a Cure type of like one of these type of revival bands, like the Shout Out Louds or something like that.
Right.
But they don't have like the stylization. I mean, if you watch their videos, they look like construction workers. And so it's kind of like the working man's Cure revival type of band. And the whole album I think is pretty solid. I'll pick a song here, and we'll go with number 3, which is called Run (parentheses) Run Run and (parentheses), which I think is interesting. So we'll do that first.
Sweet Serenades. Yeah, I agree with the Cure and Shout Out Louds references. Definitely the poppy side of the Cure.
Yeah.
And there are little Cure-ish things like interspersed through it, which is which are kind of fun. Like there's one with a keyboard that sounds like that song Close to Me. Remember that?
Yeah.
And remember the Shout Out Louds? That was their last album, I think, was the one that all three of us said was bad. It was like, we're like, this is the band of the week, and we none of us like it. Yeah, I really like this album, The Sweet Serenades. And it's funny because it sort of came out of nowhere because, you know, I think if Johnny Roast Beef had not recommended this to you and then you sharing with us, I would never have even heard of it.
Yeah.
It never got any kind of publicity at all. So this is the kind of band we need to be promoting.
Sure.
So,
yeah, pick a song.
You might be able to predict what I was going to pick, but I like track 7, Young Love. That's Young Love, The Sweet Serenades. That one's kind of twee.
Yeah, another great song. I was thinking as I was listening to that, maybe a little more low-key, less theatrical, Arcade Fire maybe in there somewhere?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. And I don't know, that guitar line, it's kind of camera obscura or something. I don't know if that's the right band, but it's got that kind of feel to it. So
now, I think the best song on here is actually one where they have a female singer, and she's a guest singer named Carolina Comstedt. Excuse me, I can't see my screen here, but it's called "After All the Violence," and I think it's got like kind of a really laid back groove to start off the song. So why don't you play some of that?
Even running around in circles.
That was one of my picks too. That's, you know what's, it says something about the album, I think, that you don't even notice. Like, I didn't really notice that there was a guest singer on that as I went through the album, because it just fits in really well.
Mm-hmm.
Good album. Yep. Do we have anything else to say about the Sweet Serenades?
Generally, when I first hear a band, I went to go see what they looked like, and they have a video for their song Can't Get Enough, and it's really kind of a disturbing video, mostly because it has like a homeless old man running around naked, which is kind of really gross. So if you're looking for a video, I would suggest one other than the Can't Get Enough video, but I don't know, just personal taste, I guess.
They need to work on their video production, I guess.
That got my attention.
Yeah. So this is another band we need to bring to the U.S., right? This is an untapped band, clearly.
Yeah. So, where are they from? I don't even know where they're from.
They're from Sweden.
Oh, Swedes. How sweet it is. All right.
Yeah. All right. See, we stumble upon Swedish bands without even realizing it. And we say, hey, they're pretty good. Okay, let's move continents, okay? We're going to go over to Australia now.
That's right. Give it up for Perth.
A fun discovery, at least according to me. Taco Leg. Here's a band that, you know what I love about this? It's 12 songs, and it's not even 20 minutes long. The longest song is like, you know, less than 2.5 minutes, I think. And it's really simple. I guess they call it punk. Sort of reminds me of the first band I ever had where we didn't know how to play anything, and we just started playing the simplest thing we could, and we said, hey, we just recorded a song, this is fun. And and that's kind of how I feel about this Taco Leg. So let's just start by playing something. They get criticized for, you know, being a bad band, because by objective standards, you know, you when you hear this, you'll probably agree that it's not like music that takes a whole lot of talent to play. But it's one of these things where over the past 2 weeks, I've probably listened to this more than anything else, because if I can't decide what to listen to, it's like, throw on Taco Leg. I mean, can't go wrong. So this song I'm going to play, this is an example of, you'll notice the drummer, he comes in late, comes in at the wrong time on this song. And they must have just said, you know, this is part of our whole deal that we don't care. This is called Shadow Pal. Taco Leg. So, what do you think, Chris?
I am of two minds on this album. First of all, they're obviously going for some like kind of do-it-yourself ethic,
yep,
type of sound, which I really appreciate. Like I was talking earlier about, you know, kind of the early 80s DC bands, you know, Minor Threat, and they don't sound like them, but you know, just kind of the idea that you could get together with some friends and almost kind of make an album in your basement. I think there's just, you know, something awesome about that. And you know, some of the riffs are catchy and all that. However, I don't think you're going to walk away from this album thinking that you've just listened to a work of genius.
No, definitely not.
You haven't been transformed into a world like OK Computer does or something like that. So it almost kind of feels like you and I could probably sit down in an afternoon, think of a couple riffs, and maybe bang out three or four songs that are on this album. So in that respect, I mean, it is what it is, but it's a good enough listen. I can understand why you like it.
I think of it as sort of minimalist art, you know, where it's not complicated to make, but somehow you hit the sweet spot, and I keep listening to it and having a smile on my face.
So, well, yeah, for the same reason that I like Mount Carmel, where they reach back to a very specific time in music history and make an album that sounds exactly like it. These guys do the same thing, and it was just kind of a time of garage bands where you and your buddies got together, and there was no production value whatsoever. So, you know, I can appreciate that. I think it's interesting.
So I've got to play a little bit more. This one, yeah. I'm going to play this one. I love because it has this great drum break in the middle.
And you could play the whole album in about 10 minutes.
I could,
so
yeah.
I'll just sit here and listen.
So this one, listen to the drum break in the middle. It's just funny. It's called I Can't Decide. Taco Leg.
Yeah, see, this is an example of where a band, where I like the name of the band, where I think it's funny and clever enough to where I think I'll give them credit for knowing exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, like they're not really being serious. But this, it makes me think, what will happen with their next album? Will they get too good? Like it's like they will accidentally get too tight as a band, and then maybe they won't sound as good anymore.
They'll lose their appeal?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting.
It's funny. The first Death Cab for Cutie album, the production value was really, really low, and I think they were kind of stung by the criticism. So their next album, maybe it was their second, between their second and third, but their next album, We Have the Facts and Your Vote, and We're Voting Yes. Mm-hmm. They start out with like this little riff that sounds like it was recorded in somebody's basement, and then suddenly it just shifts into this like high production, really good sounding, part of the song. And so I'm sure they had fun with that, like playing along. So that's what they should probably do. And I think the White Stripes did something similar where they were, criticized for not having a bass. So one of their albums, I forget which one it is, starts off with a bass line. The dun 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 dun.
Right.
Dun.
Yep.
And so I think that was their answer to the criticism that that they didn't have a bass player. So.
Yeah, you want bass? Here's your bass.
Yeah. Just take this.
Well, I'm thinking Taco Leg. They might get a cult following, and then on their next album they'll have like guest musicians. You know, like Michael Stipe will be on it.
Have like these. That would be great. Have like Slash on there playing this really simple riff.
Right.
Slash, everybody.
Here he is. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here I'll play one more. This is one that kind of rocks. It's called Find Me. All right. They're rocking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Taco Leg. So check them out if you feel like checking them out. I mean, you probably know now whether you'd like to check them out or not. But I've definitely gotten a good fun factor out of this album.
Yeah. You mentioned Michael Stipe, and before we go, I wanted to mention that the Hurricane Sandy relief concert, I don't know if you guys talked about this before. Little performance of Losing Your Religion with Chris Martin of Coldplay and Michael Stipe, I thought was kind of the highlight of the whole thing. Other than, of course, Paul McCartney teaming up with the surviving members of Nirvana for the song Cut Me Some Slack, which is a new song that apparently they wrote together, which I think is just a great song. So just wanted to mention that.
I'll have to go back and watch or listen to that, because I saw the name of the song and I'm like, well, that they kept talking about it being like a Nirvana reunion, you know, which is kind of a misnomer, I guess. I was thinking, well, I never heard of that song. Is that some deep cut or something? So they wrote that song just like in the rehearsal.
I'm sure Dave Grohl probably wrote it and brought it to McCartney. And of course, you know, everybody having to do with anything in music worship McCartney. So I'm imagine it's probably a big thrill to take a song to McCartney and him like it. But I mean, it's a pretty rocking song, and the fact that Paul McCartney's got to be. He's got to be 70, right? He's got to be getting up there.
Yeah,
can still belt it out. I thought that was really impressive. And then they went on to perform it again on Saturday Night Live. So I don't know if that clip is online either, but yeah, it's worthwhile.
You know, that's something that I think when I hear people they complain about Paul McCartney like not being able to hit the notes like he used to or whatever, I always think, come on, look at the age the guy is and. He's really good for his age. Like, and when I watch The Who now, what do you expect? You know, this is not Roger Daltrey at age 30. You know,
right? And however, at the Sandy concert, where Roger Daltrey essentially like took off his shirt.
Well, that maybe he didn't need to do that.
Yeah. That was disturbing.
Yeah,
that was troublesome.
But as a band, they can still play. You know, and I think that you know, I like it when these guys that are that age can still play, and they don't, to me at least, they don't look like they're just out there because they need the money now or something. They're legit. Now, I don't know, what about the Rolling Stones going on tour? Have you read anything about that? You know,
I actually saw the Rolling Stones 20 years ago when I was in college. They played a big stadium show, and you know, the joke then was that they were too old to be out touring.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah.
I mean, the line everybody hears is that the average age of the Rolling Stones is greater than the average age of the U.S. Supreme Court at this point.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it's funny because the Sandy concert was The Who, The Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney, what's his name from Pink Floyd?
Roger Waters.
Yeah, it just went on and on and on.
Yeah.
Like about the old Brits.
Right. Yeah, that is kind of funny. I didn't realize the Rolling Stones played at that benefit.
Indeed they did.
I haven't seen any recent Rolling Stones footage. I'm kind of curious to see how they sound now.
Well, it wasn't too bad.
Well, that's good. Power to the old guys. All right, I think it's time to sign off.
All right, cool.
And we'll keep it rocking. And
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. We'll talk to you again in 2013 with another edition of, and a lot more editions of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Bye.